Marvel cigarettes, worth crowing about. Marvels, the cigarettes of quality, are on the air as Francis P. Douglas reports the news. Mr. Douglas is standing by Jefferson City, the Missouri state capital, where he is covering personally the activities connected with an event outstanding in the political history of the state, namely the dispute over the November gubernatorial election. Mr. Douglas will speak directly from Jefferson City in a few minutes. First, however, here are the headlines tonight. Hard-driving British and Australian armored units drove far westward of Italy's besieged Libyan base at Tobruk tonight, while clearing skies over the English Channel brought a resumption of the German air attack on Britain. The British Mediterranean land forces also were reported to be battering the Italians so hard, 180 miles to the southeast of Tobruk, that fascist troops were evacuating the fortified oasis of Dirabub. Official communiques disclosing a triple-pronged thrust against the Italian legions in Africa described the British operations as extending over almost 3,000 miles. Continued success against the Italians also were reported by Greek forces in Albania, where fighting at bayonet point in the snow-covered mountain region on the northern Albanian front. Greek forces stormed Italian fortified positions and captured additional fascist ski troops. On the Channel front, the three-day lull was broken as German airmen scattered bombs in virtually every section of Britain, causing casualties and destruction in one of their most widespread offensives. Early morning reports told of a total of 11 towns in various parts of England suffering bomb hits, but the northwest section appeared to be getting the worst of it. In the Balkans, the situation remained unchanged. High quarters in all the little nations affected awaited the next move by Germany. You know, there are three very good reasons why you should try Marvel cigarettes. First, you'll genuinely like Marvels. You won't have to cultivate a taste for them. They're skillfully blended to satisfy the highly exacting taste preferences of American smokers. The second reason is that they're a young and youthful cigarette made for alert, vital, progressive folks who recognize new and extraordinary value when they find it. Marvels are quality through and through, a superb blend of magnificently selected tobaccos, quality made and quality packed. Last but by no means least, despite their superior quality, Marvels cost you less. You save money on every pack you buy. Now, surely you'll agree, it's time to try Marvels. Ask for Marvels in the smart-looking orange, black, and white package. M-A-R-V-E-L-S, Marvel Cigarettes. Negotiators made progress in at least temporarily averting action in one strike tonight, only to have their efforts followed within the hour by announcement that another labor dispute of major proportions was taking form. The latest strike threat to come into the defense program was that announced tonight by Carl Swanson, regional director of the CIO, United Automobile Workers. That workers in the Chevrolet factory of the General Motors Corporation at Flint, Michigan, had approved a strike call. The vote had been in progress since Monday, and although Swanson declined to reveal the actual figures, he said the ratio was 10-1 in favor of the strike. Taking of the vote, which will affect approximately 12,000 men, was ordered by the union after it was charged by the UAW, CIO, that the Chevrolet Corporation had violated certain provisions of the union grievance procedure. It is now up to the International Board of the CIO to designate the course of further action. While at East Farmingdale, New York, Duncan Cox, president of Ranger Aircraft Corporation, announced tonight that a threatened strike of more than 200 union employees had been deferred for at least 48 hours. The strike, originally scheduled for early this evening by the aircraft division of the CIO, United Automobile Workers Union, was postponed following a conference of union and company officials attended by a Federal Labor Department conciliator. The Ranger Company, a subsidiary of Fairchild Airplane and Engine Corporation, has been turning out engines for the United States government. Pressure from the National Defense Commission in Washington was what brought about the truce. While the negotiators were conferring, it is reported, John Owen, head of the United Mine Workers of Ohio and representative of the Defense Commission appointed by Sidney Hillman had telephoned from Washington asking that union and company men continue negotiations and hold off the strike for at least 2 days. Ranger Company employees are demanding a contract renewal with wage increases. The previous contract expired October 31st. Tonight, even as the United Auto Workers continued to hammer at these corporations with their demands and threats of strike, CIO President Philip Murray put his unions on record in Washington as opposed to any legislative curtailment of the right to strike in defense industries. His remarks, interpreted as the CIO answer to congressional demands for a curb on defense strikes, included the charge that companies are taking advantage of the defense situation to jeopardize the rights of labor. Bombs and planes for the British, guns for Greece, cannon for China, and defense for democracy. That's the keynote in Washington tonight, and the keynote is rapidly being translated into action. An extraordinary White House conference tonight cleared the way for introduction in Congress tomorrow of legislation to turn over billions of dollars worth of war supplies to Great Britain and other embattled democracies under President Roosevelt's loan-lease proposal. The history-making measure will be introduced simultaneously in both houses of Congress by Senate Democratic Leader Barkley and House Majority Leader McCormick. The bill will be referred immediately to the Foreign Affairs Committee of both houses, and hearings are expected to begin early next week. It is believed the bill will seek to give the Army and Navy, whose commander-in-chief is Mr. Roosevelt, full authority to provide all the all-out material aid to Britain. Reports circulating in congressional quarters tonight are that the program will amount to as much as $10 billion. In St. Louis tonight, police reported the death of 27-year-old Mrs. Mary E. Standish of 4432 Washington Boulevard. She was the wife of Miles Standish, widely known staff writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. According to police reports, Standish arrived at his home and found the doors locked. When he finally gained entrance, he investigated and found his wife lying on a bed with a magazine and a revolver beside her. Standish told police he had given the small caliber target pistol to his wife as a Christmas gift and warned her to use care in handling it. No explanation of the shot which pierced Mrs. Standish's right temple was advanced. A coroner's inquest has been scheduled for tomorrow evening. All right, Francis P. Douglas is standing by, and we'll hear him speaking directly from Jefferson City in just a few seconds. But incidentally, folks, regarding the point I stressed a while back on the number of alert progressive people who have switched to marvels, let me add this statement. Youthfully minded folks are always ready to try new things. They are certainly going for marvels in a big way. Just watch and see for yourself. And now, we switch to Jefferson City. Go ahead, Francis P. Douglas.
Good evening, everyone. Here at Jefferson City, the state capital, there has been another day of political maneuvering. And meanwhile, the state legislature has marked time on its regular business, devoting its hours to party caucuses. At this time, it seems likely there will be no governor inaugurated on Monday, although invitations have already been sent out for the formal installation of Republican Forrest C. Donnell as governor. His election over Democrat Lawrence McDaniel of St. Louis is challenged by the Democratic Party. The joint session of the House and Senate, at which the election returns on the state officers would be canvassed and announced, is required for the seating of a newly elected governor. And it is unlikely tonight that this joint session will be held before Monday. The session, in the opinion of legislators, would take more than a day, and no one in the legislature wants to start any new business on Friday, for most members want to start back home for the weekend by Friday noon. Senate Democrats caucused this afternoon and heard the opinion of Attorney General McKittrick that it is not mandatory for the legislature to accept the results of the election of governor as evidenced by the return certified to the Speaker of the House. And he held the legislature has the power to make an investigation. At the caucus, some senators concurred in McKittrick's opinion, but asserted that to open the ballot boxes would require a contest of the election, and this could take place only after Donnell is seated. The Senate Democrats are caucusing again tonight to hear Marion Hewlin, chairman of the Democratic State Committee, who has championed the investigation plan. The caucus is still in progress. Meanwhile, the Republicans are marking time. Their official position is that the members of the legislature can be counted on to do what the Constitution provides, and that in the Republican opinion is to seat Donald. And the Republicans don't mind the delay, for they feel that the more time that passes, the more will be the pressure on the legislators to follow that method, pressure put on by the people back home. Last night, we had the pleasure of having with us Senator Frank T. Briggs of Macon, a Democrat and Speaker pro tem of the Senate, to discuss the Democratic view of the situation. Tonight we have Joseph A. Falzone of Clayton, who has been elected by his Republican colleagues to give the Republican side of the disputed issue here tonight. Senator Falzone, an attorney, is from St. Louis County, the home county of Mr. Donald. The senator's district, the 25th, also includes Gasconade and Franklin counties. This is his first term in the Missouri Senate, but he served in the House of Representatives in 1935 and 1936. Senator, Mr. McKittrick today gave an opinion that the legislature can proceed by the method of investigation. Would that, in your opinion, permit the opening of the ballot boxes?
No. The law contemplates and provides for the secrecy of the ballot. And our Constitution, under Section 3, Article 8, protects and guards that privacy and clearly states that the only occasions that the ballot box can be gone into by anybody are first, in cases of contested elections, second, grand jury investigations, and third, in the trial of all civil and criminal cases in which the violation of any law relating to elections are under investigation or at issue. The legislature and none of its officers have the right to enter ballot boxes unless it be upon an election contest. And in my opinion, if they attempt to do so, any citizen in a private suit could enjoin and prevent them from so doing.
Now, if the boxes cannot be opened upon an investigation and without a contest, what would be the purpose of proceeding by that method?
Well, Mr. Douglas, in my opinion, it could only be undertaken under the guise of having a contest without following the law. How the ballots are marked and who they voted for could only be shown by the ballots themselves. The election officers, under their oath, cannot disclose that, even though they remembered. And it is my belief that the threatened plan of Mr. Hewlin and his committee to have an investigation at this time without following the Constitution is only to prevent the seating of Forrest Donnell, elected by the people as their governor.
What is the attitude of the Republican members of the legislature on the proper procedure to be followed?
Well, Mr. Douglas, the Republican members of the legislature have been sworn to uphold and defend and observe the Constitution of our state, as has all other members of our legislature. It provides that the legislature must assemble in joint assembly.
I'm sorry, Senator, that our time is about up, and may I thank you on behalf of our sponsors, Stefano Brothers and ourselves, for being here tonight. Now we are returning you to the studios in St. Louis and to Paul Wills, who has a message for you about marble. And from Jefferson City, we bid you good night and good smoking.
Smokers who try marble cigarettes get a very pleasant surprise. They discover that marbles are superior quality cigarettes, thoroughly American in the way they taste, delightfully smooth and mild, yet full-bodied and rich enough to hit the spot. Marbles are a superb blend of carefully selected domestic and Turkish tobaccos made by Stefano Brothers, who have been making America's quality cigarettes for a half a century. The very fact that marbles are the largest selling cigarettes in their class is convincing evidence of marbles' quality and their truly sensational value. In all fairness to yourself, try marbles. Ask for marbles. M-A-R-V-E-L-S, Marbles Cigarettes. Marbles Cigarettes, worth crowing about. Francis P. Douglas was heard direct from Jefferson City, where he is personally observing the activities connected with the dispute over the November gubernatorial election in Missouri. He will be on the air again tomorrow night at this same time. For complete, accurate, and swift reporting of the news as it happens, keep your dials on KMOX. Your announcer, Paul Wills, bidding you good night. This is KMOX, the voice of St. Louis in the Mark Building.